Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are facing what you might call the ultimate hidden crisis in trauma medicine, abdominal and genitourinary injuries. These are the ones that are often life-threatening, frequently invisible,
right?
And they demand instant, very cautious intervention.
They absolutely do. I mean, the abdominal cavity itself is just this enormous region. It stretches from the diaphragm, you know, that big muscle right under your chest.
Right, the dome.
Yeah, exactly. All the way down to the pelvis. And it's just packed with vital, really vulnerable organs.
Okay.
And because the signs of trouble can be so subtle, sometimes almost non-existent early on, we really have to treat the mechanism of injury, how it happened, as maybe our most critical diagnostic tool up front.
Okay, so our mission today is to try and cut through some of that complexity.
Good.
We're going to aim for a comprehensive understanding of the anatomy in there, the actual physics, you know, blunt versus penetrating trauma.
Yeah, the forces involved.
And maybe most importantly, those crucial assessment clues, the things that might just scream massive internal bleeding or deadly infection, even when things look okay on the surface.
And if you need that sort of high-stakes anchor, here it is. Damage in this region really boils down to two immediate, potentially lethal threats.
Okay.
You're worried about massive internal bleeding, usually from the solid organs, or you're worried about lethal contamination from ruptured hollow organs. And the time it takes for either of those to really show themselves, well, it can trick even experienced clinicians.
That definitely sets the stakes. So let's unpack the anatomy first, because understanding what is in there really determines how we approach the problem, right?
Absolutely. Foundational.
So when we talk geography, we mean everything from that diaphragm muscle down to the pelvic brim.
Mm-hmm.
And often, you know, in the field, we reference the four quadrants or maybe the periumbilical area right around the navel.
That's the map, yeah. But the critical distinction, the thing you really need to grasp, is what's inside those boundaries. Because solid organs and hollow organs, they fail completely differently under trauma.
Okay, let's start with the solid organs then. These are the ones that pose that immediate hemorrhage risk you mentioned.
Right. They're incredibly vascular, packed with blood vessels. So if they get crushed by blunt force, they just bleed profoundly.
Okay, like the liver.
Exactly. The liver, it's the largest one, the most vascular, sits mostly in the right upper quadrant, what we call the RUQ, right under your ribs on that side. More than the liver, yeah. Followed closely by the liver, though. And then, you know, the pancreas is also on that list, kind of tucked away behind the stomach. Damage to any of these means rapid internal blood loss is your primary concern.
Okay, solid organs bleed. What about the hollow ones?
Yeah.
Stomach, intestines, bladder.
Mm-hmm.
They're different.
Completely different threat. They're actually generally more resilient to blunt force. They can kind of deform and absorb some impact.
Uh-huh. Unless they're full.
Exactly. If they're full, like a full bladder or stomach, they're much more likely to burst under pressure.
Okay. And when they burst? Spillage.
Spillage is the word.
Yeah.
And this contamination, whether it's stomach acid, urine, or bowel contents, it leads directly to peritonitis. That's inflammation of the abdominal lining, the peritoneum.
Right.
And we define two types, really. There's chemical peritonitis, which hits fast and hard, caused by irritating fluids like stomach acid or bile.
Okay.
And then there's bacterial peritonitis, which might creep up over several hours as bacteria from the bowel contents spill out and multiply. Either way, it's a surgical emergency.
Okay, so that's the what solid versus hollow, bleed versus spill. Now let's tackle the how. What forces are actually causing these organs to fail? You mentioned blunt trauma is the big one.
Overwhelmingly, yes. Abdominal injury is most often the result of blunt trauma. And it's sobering. Even with everything we can do now, we're still looking at a mortality rate somewhere between 10% and maybe 30% for significant blunt abdominal trauma.
Wow. Why so high?
It's largely down to three core mechanisms of injury in blunt trauma. First, you've got Shearing. Yeah, think classic rapid deceleration, high-speed car crash, maybe a fall. The body stops suddenly.
Right.
But the dense organs inside, like the liver, kidneys, spleen, they have inertia. They keep moving forward for a split second, and that tears them away from their fixed attachments, their blood vessels.
Ouch. Okay, so that's shearing. What else?
Then you get crushing, pretty much what it sounds like. The abdominal contents get squeezed between whatever hit them on the outside, like a steering wheel, and the solid resistance of the spinal column behind them. The solid organs we talked about, kidneys, liver, spleen, they're most at risk here. Their delicate tissue just gets pulverized.
Right. Makes sense.
And finally, there's compression. This is usually from a direct blow or maybe external compression, like a seatbelt worn too high. It deforms the hollow organs.
Oh, okay.
And that can easily rupture a full bladder or tear the small intestine or even the diaphragm. And then you get that awful mix of internal bleeding and spillage.
Got it. Shearing, crushing, compression. That covers blunt trauma. What about penetrating? Stabbings, gunshots.
Penetrating trauma, well, it's maybe more straightforward in how it causes damage. It cuts or lacerates tissue, creating an open abdominal injury.
Okay.
But here's a really crucial comparison. Because of the energy transfer involved, a gunshot wound almost always causes significantly more internal havoc than a stab wound.
More damage from a bullet, even if the entry wound looks small.
Absolutely. The bullet creates a cavity, tumbles, sends out shockwaves. Gunshot wounds commonly injure the small bowel, the colon, liver, major blood vessels. Stab wounds, they tend to involve the liver, small bowel, diaphragm, colon too. But the damage path is usually narrower, more predictable, less energy dumped into the surrounding tissue.
This really highlights why knowing the story of the trauma, what happened at the scene, is so critical. It's like the ultimate diagnostic shortcut sometimes.
It really is. You need those details from the field report, from bystanders, from the patient if possible. It's often the only way to anticipate what might be going on inside unseen.
Like with car crashes, you mentioned patterns.
Exactly. Think about motor vehicle crashes, MVCs. Wow. We generally classify five patterns. Frontal impact, lateral or T-bone, rear impact, rotational spins, and rollovers.
Okay.
And they cause different injuries. Frontal impacts often drive forces that injure the liver and spleen.
Makes sense, hitting the steering wheel or dash.
Right. Lateral impacts, T-bones, they're notorious for injuring the diaphragm on the impacted side and the pelvis, and unfortunately, rollovers.
Well, they have the greatest potential for lethal injuries overall, just because the forces are so chaotic and multidirectional.
And seatbelts, you mentioned them with compression.
Yeah, improper seatbelt use is a big one. If that lap belt rides up over the soft abdomen instead of staying low on the pelvic bones,
right.
And in a sudden stop, it acts like a direct compression device.
Mm-hmm.
Can definitely cause those bowel or bladder injuries.
We also need to think about extreme forces, right? Like falls, blasts.
Absolutely. Physics doesn't lie. There are thresholds. A fall greater than 20 feet for an adult or greater than 10 feet for a child that dictates immediate transport to a high-level trauma center, period. No debate.
Okay.
And consider blast injuries. Fragments from an explosion can travel at like 4,500 feet per second. That's nearly double a high-speed rifle bullet. The energy transfer is just immense. Okay, let's shift gears slightly. Let's move into assessment. This is where we try to identify that hidden crisis. If the abdomen is basically a black box that hides blood.
Mm-hmm.
What are those subtle, maybe non-obvious signs we absolutely cannot afford to miss?
Well, first off, any unexplained symptoms of shock. Things like agitation, confusion, a sudden change in mental status, restlessness.
Even if their blood pressure seems okay initially.
Especially then sometimes. Those changes can be the first sign that the body is compensating for major internal blood loss. So, unexplained shock symptoms should immediately raise your suspicion for significant abdominal trauma. Remember, the abdomen can silently hide liters of blood before the pressure drops dramatically.
And how the patient holds themselves, their physical response.
Huge clue. When the peritoneum, that sensitive lining inside the abdomen, gets inflamed by blood or bowel contents, any movement is extremely painful. So patients often present with guarding.
Guarding.
Yeah, it's that involuntary tensing or rigidity of the abdominal muscles. They're trying to splint the area, protect it from movement and pain. It's a very reliable sign of underlying irritation.
Okay.
And this is exactly why, for confirmed or even highly suspected abdominal injuries, the rule is clear. Short on-scene time. Minimize messing around. Rapid transport to the highest level trauma center you can get to.
Because the definitive fix is surgical.
Absolutely. Stopping the hemorrhage, cleaning out the contamination that happens in the operating room.
So during the secondary assessment, maybe en route or on arrival, what specific clues are we gathering? Palpation.
Yeah, palpation, but carefully. The technique really matters. You want to start palpating the quadrant farthest away from where the patient says it hurts or where you see obvious injury.
Why start far away?
It helps you map the extent of the tenderness and guarding without immediately causing maximum pain right over the injured area. You work your way towards the suspected injury site.
Got it. And what are you feeling for?
You're feeling for tenderness, rigidity, any masses, and maybe deformities. And you're always thinking about the potential for retroperitoneal hemorrhage, that bleeding behind the main abdominal cavity near the spine. can be subtle.
What about bruising on the abdominal wall, like seatbelt marks?
Those contusions themselves aren't usually the critical problem, but they are invaluable clues. They point directly to where the force was applied and therefore where internal injury and potential hemorrhagic shock might be originating from, like Ray Turner's sign or Cullen's sign, though those are later findings.
Okay, what about urine? Blood in the urine?
Hematuria, yeah. Big indicator. And the color can give you a clue about the location. Dark, almost brown urine usually means bleeding higher up in the urinary system, like the kidneys, the upper tract.
Right.
Bright red blood usually suggests bleeding lower down, closer to the bladder or the urethra itself.
Yeah, the type of pain the patient describes, does that help?
Definitely. You try to distinguish between somatic pain and visceral pain. Somatic pain is usually sharp, well-localized. It often comes from injury to the abdominal wall itself or irritation of the parietal peritoneum, the outer lining. The patient can usually point right to it.
Right.
Visceral pain is different. It's often described as a deep, dull ache, maybe cramping, poorly localized. It signals trouble deeper inside, within an organ itself. Knowing the difference can help you narrow down the source of the internal damage much faster.
Let's zoom in on some specific organs now, starting with those major hemorrhage risks. Liver injuries, how do we suspect those?
You suspect liver injury with trauma to the right side of the chest or the upper abdomen, especially if you find fractures of the lower right rib, say ribs 9 through 12, or significant bruising in that right upper quadrant, the RUQ.
Yep.
And it's important to know how the liver often gets injured in those rapid deceleration events we talked about.
The shearing.
Exactly. There's a structure inside called the ligamentum teres. It's basically a tough, fibrous remnant of the umbilical vein from when you were a fetus. In a sudden stop, this ligament, which anchors part of the liver, can act almost like a fixed strap or even a blade, causing a slicing or tearing injury through the liver tissue itself.
Wow, okay. That's specific. What about the spleen? Similar clues.
Similar thinking, just on the left side. Suspect spleen lacerations if the 9th or 10th ribs are fractured on the left, or if there's tenderness specifically in the LUQ.
Left upper quadrant.
Right. And a classic, though sometimes delayed, sign of spleen irritation is referred pain. The patient feels pain up in their left shoulder. It's called Kerr's sign.
Left shoulder pain from a spleen injury.
Yeah, diaphragmatic irritation refers pain up there via the phrenic nerve. It's a well-known connection.
Okay, now you mentioned retroperitoneal earlier, that space behind the main cavity. Why is that area so tricky?
It's crucial to distinguish between injuries inside the main peritoneal cavity versus injuries in the retroperitoneal space. This space is behind that main lining, and it holds organs like the pancreas, the kidneys, the duodenum, first part of the small intestine, major blood vessels like the aorta and vena cava. What makes this area so dangerous is that injuries here often do not present with those early, obvious signs of peritonitis or abdominal distension that you might see with injuries inside the peritoneum. The blood or fluid can kind of collect back there without causing immediate widespread irritation.
So the diagnosis can be delayed.
Yeah.
Dangerously delayed.
Exactly. Take pancreatic injuries. They usually require really high energy forces, like a direct blow to the upper abdomen. But the signs and symptoms, like severe pain or shock, might be significantly delayed, maybe hours. It makes the diagnosis really challenging until the patient potentially just crashes.
That is scary. Okay, let's quickly shift to immediate management for external trauma, things we can see. We've covered the internal life threats.
Right.
What about something like an evisceration? Organs actually protruding from a wound.
Yeah, visually dramatic and serious. The absolute priority is to cover those exposed organs. Use a sterile dressing and ideally moisten it with sterile saline. You don't want the tissue drying out.
And you try to push them back in?
No, absolutely not. Never try to push them back in. Cover them gently. And critically, to try and prevent decreased blood flow to the bowel, what we call strangulation, and also for patient comfort, you want to gently flex the patient's knees up towards their chest.
Okay, flex the knees.
Yeah, it relaxes the abdominal muscles and strongly discourage them from coughing or bearing down as that increases abdominal pressure.
Makes sense. What about impaled objects, knife, rebar, whatever?
The rule here is sacrosanct. Stabilize the object in place. Move it as little as possible. Do not attempt to remove it or even wiggle it. That object might be plugging a hole in a major vessel. Removal happens in the controlled environment of the operating room.
Got it. Stabilize, don't remove. Okay, lastly, let's touch on genitourinary and genital trauma, the urinary system and genitals.
Right. You have to remember the system is also highly vascular, especially the kidneys and the external genitals. So rapid bleeding is definitely a concern.
What about the bladder?
Bladder rupture is serious. It's often associated with major pelvic fractures, like from a crush injury or severe MVC. And it carries a high mortality rate, largely because urine spills directly into the abdominal cavity, causing that chemical and bacterial peritonitis.
So how would you suspect a bladder or maybe a urethra injury?
Suspect if the patient has obvious trauma to the lower abdomen or pelvis, if they complain they can't urinate despite feeling the urge, or if you actually see blood at the external opening of the penis, the urethral meatus.
Okay. And for trauma specifically to the external male genitalia?
Well, bleeding is certainly a concern that needs managing, usually with direct pressure. But perhaps the major long-term concern is potential loss of fertility or function.
Right.
So management involves gentle handling, compression for bleeding, and maybe cold packs to reduce swelling. And one crucial point, if you find an object placed around the penis or testicles causing constriction like a ring or something,
yeah,
do not attempt removal in the field. That needs specialized care at the hospital to avoid further injury.
Okay. And female genital trauma.
For blunt trauma, it often involves saddle-type injuries, like falling onto a bar or beam. External hemorrhage is managed with direct pressure, just like elsewhere. And similar to the male anatomy, absolutely do not attempt to remove any foreign object that might be stuck in the vaginal canal. Transport for hospital evaluation.
Okay, so if we kind of synthesize all this,
yeah,
it really comes back to those two main immediate enemies, doesn't it?
It does. Internal abdominal bleeding, usually from solid organs, and contamination from a ruptured hollow organ. Recognizing the potential for either, even with subtle signs, has to be instantaneous, and specialist surgical care is always required.
We've really seen how specific physical mechanisms, whether it's that ligamentum teres slicing the liver into deceleration, or a T-bone crash, maybe injuring the diaphragm, they leave a very precise signature that we as clinicians absolutely must look for and understand.
Yeah, the story of the trauma is key. Which leads me to a final thought, maybe something for you to consider. Oh. Given the very real danger of delayed diagnosis, especially with those highly concealed issues like pancreatic injuries or retroperitoneal bleeding, how much are we, maybe in the broader system, truly relying on those early, sometimes low-tech indicators? Things like subtle pain changes, mechanism, maybe mild vital sign shifts? Or are we sometimes waiting too long, perhaps relying too heavily on high-tech imaging later on, to confirm what the mechanism of injury might have already told us was likely happening?
That's a really powerful question. That subtle difference between catching it early based on the story and the initial signs versus waiting for definitive proof. Where that difference could literally be life or death. It really underscores trusting the story the scene tells us.
Exactly.
Thank you for joining us for this deep dive.